Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot. I'm Max, and I'm joined here today by my co-host Daniel. And this week, we'll be diving into politics from both sides of the Atlantic. Rachel Reeves' latest budget shifts in the UK, Zach Polanski and the Greens gaining ground, and Zoran Mamdani's progressive agenda in New York City. We'll be breaking down what's happening, why it matters, and what it all means for voters, taxpayers, and everyday people. So let's get into it. We're going to start off first by talking about Zoran Mamdani's progressive agenda. So for those of you who don't know, Zoran Mamdani is a democratic socialist who has just won the New York mayor election, and his policies focus on affordability and social justice. So to run through some of his key policies, he's going to be having a four-year rent freeze for over 1 million apartments and giving 200,000 new affordable units over 10 years. One of the things that he focuses on primarily as well is this idea of childcare and having strong public services, including free childcare for under five-year-olds, free bus travel for 4 years, and city-run grocery stores to help reduce food prices. So Daniel, just to bring you in here, which of Mamdani's policies do you think would make the biggest difference for New Yorkers looking at his election win? And do you think they're realistic to fund in the long term?
I think, well, the first question, I think that rent freeze would definitely be the clearest and have the fastest impact. New Yorkers spend an extraordinary share of their income on housing, and so even stabilising rent could feel like a lifeline for most people there, and I think they'll be very grateful for that.
Yeah.
And I feel like also the free childcare and the buses would be transformational for the working families in New York. I feel like it may be slightly trying to please the people, which of course he has to do with these grand statements. They're definitely what, like, he's kind of hit the nail on the head with the things that he's listened to the New Yorkers. He's hit the nail on the head with the things that they need and what they've been asking for, which is great. I feel like we may see a slight saying like, oh, we need to be a bit more mature, we need to be a bit more sensible when coming and addressing these policies that he's trying to put in place actually comes into action. We might see him like stepping back and saying, hey, we can't really do this or we can't really do that. But I definitely think he's listened and he's tried to listen to their problems.
I mean, he's definitely popular among the voters, isn't he?
Definitely.
I mean, a problem, obviously, such as the cost of living crisis, people, working class families are really struggling. So the fact that his policies try to tackle real affordability issues, that's quite important when because he's trying to appeal, isn't he, to a whole city. It's not just appealing to the wealthy as well. I mean, one of the things he's trying to implement as well is having higher taxes on the wealthiest individuals. So, as in trying to fund these, obviously, the free childcare, the free bus travel. But maybe a problem, would you say, maybe implementation? When he wants to implement these different policies, do you think they're going to go down well?
Yeah, I think the main problem with that one is where's the money coming from? I mean, for the funding, relying too heavily on the taxing the high earners is very risky, especially for a city like New York, because wealth is mobile. And many people have already left New York for tax reasons. And so I'm not sure in the long term the revenue based off of that is solid enough for the purposes that he wants in the long term. And so I think maybe we might see more people leave New York because of trying to fund these statements that he's put out.
And do you think it's a problem maybe that Donald Trump did clearly back the Democrat rival to Mamdani instead of Mamdani? Obviously Mamdani's won, so do you feel like this could impact his relationship with Trump? How important do you think that relationship's going to be in the coming 3 months?
Well, I would say Trump's obviously been said by many. He's very unstable, I'd say, and he's very unpredictable. And so you definitely want him on your side if he's going to be essentially your boss. And so I think he won't look favourably upon the mayor of New York, which is definitely not a good sign. I don't see the relationship going very well. But we saw in the press conference when they was asked if he still thought Trump was a fascist, Trump just said, "It's okay, you can say it. I don't mind." So yeah. Maybe that is Trump like saying, I'll allow this relationship to happen for the good of the country, or maybe that was just another one of his unpredictable moves. It's hard to tell.
I mean, their policies do clash somehow, don't they? I mean,
they do.
Trump himself is a Republican and Mamdani is a Democrat. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to negotiate the way that Mamdani is going to implement his policies, really.
As you said, their ideologies do clash, and they'll definitely be, especially when he has to get his funding from different places. It might be hard for him if people have a different opposing views to him. But of course, that happens in every election if there are different parties to the president and mayors of different cities. So I think it won't be much of a difference from what there usually is.
Obviously, the richer people are obviously leaving New York, as a lot of billionaires are leaving from England right now. What do you think would be the consequences of these really wealthy people leaving New York, and how could this affect the way that Mamdani is going to be able to distribute the tax from their money around to obviously the healthcare services, the public services themselves, like transport. I mean, he's promising to deliver free transport. So what do you think with that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously always taxing high earners is risky, and they can easily leave. And so I think in the long term, that's not the best way to get their revenue. And I don't think, that's a long-term solution. Obviously, he has to find a funding for these ideas, which he has listened to the people for, and I think are great ideas that they definitely be welcome in open arms, the people of New York.
Yeah.
But I feel as though he has to find revenue from somewhere else, because losing those rich people from the city, it will be devastating.
Yeah, if we also just for a minute look at his idea of progressive taxation. So not only is he, obviously, as I mentioned before, he's going to tax the rich, but he's also going to be implementing this on different corporations and businesses as well. So surely he realizes that if he taxes businesses, then the incentive for the employees at these businesses to come out and work every day only for their money to be taken from them would cause maybe an increase in a lack of jobs maybe being produced.
Yeah, that could happen. There might be also just a more increase of discontent.
Yeah.
When businesses see these kind of changes, when new politicians come in and they see the increases of tax things, they don't see that as very stable. And so I would say maybe if you're a business, you might look away from New York to put your business, just because of the you could see that to be unstable taxation on businesses due to Mamdani's coming in now.
So I think we're going to move on now to the second segment of today's episode, and we're going to be looking at the rising Green Party and their new leader, Zach Polanski. So just a bit of context, Zach Polanski is the first gay man to be a leader of a party in the UK, and he's gotten a lot of attention recently through his use of social media to highlight his different policies, such as introducing a wealth tax and a increasing capital gains tax as well. So he obviously is very very reliant on the idea of taxing the rich as well. What are your thoughts, Daniel, then, on this idea of his idea of cutting energy bills, delivering free school meals, and maybe controlling rent?
Well, it's definitely something that the Green Party have aimed to do, and obviously a very socialist left-wing party. And it's the kind of strategy that governments that aren't in power definitely do, because if they show, they say, we're going to tax these rich billionaires who at the moment haven't been paying enough, the one with the broadest shoulders, and then they say, oh, we're going to give it to these other people. For example, if you taxed one rich person and gave the money to 10 others, you've lost one vote, but you've gained 10. And so that's the kind of thing that the strategy that I've been going for at the moment with the Green Party.
It's like a progressive way of thinking.
But the problem with that is that when you come and you, when you get elected, if you may get elected, the problem with that is that you've lost the billionaire, which is definitely a problem for the country at the moment, as we see the mass exodus of billionaires.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, really, how the Greens were historically known as just trying to tackle environmental issues.
Yeah.
And this idea of, like, just net zero, there's nothing else, like, almost like a tunnel vision sort of thing. But now he's sort of looking at tackling inequality, and he's sort of trying to appeal to the ordinary people of Britain, as he'd put it. So what do you think about this whole shift in mindset?
Well, I think firstly it shows that the resurgence of the left wing in the UK, and it shows that they've considered to be more mature now, and they're thinking, but we can't just have this tunnel vision, like you said, of net zero and nothing else. They're becoming to take themselves a bit more seriously, and this may be because other people are taking them more seriously. And it also kind of shows that this this fight for their government is becoming a lot more real. So I think that it's promising for someone who has a left wing view.
And with the way that his policies are aligning themselves with the British people, do you think his proposals are going to gain, as you mentioned earlier, like broader support, or they're mainly just going to appeal to the progressive voters?
Well, I think the things that he says should be something that everyone is everyone should enjoy. I think obviously he's, as I said earlier, the strategy of targeting the 10 rather than the one. So obviously that one person, he probably will lose the vote of that one person.
So do you think that this agenda that he's leading about free school meals, national insurance tax on investment income, do you think he's going to be able to implement this widely or in maybe specific areas that really, where the Green Party really appeals to these type of people?
I think that he'll target the places that like have the businesses that he feels that they need to be taxed more, as he said earlier, trying to progressively tax. And I think this is not very good for trying to get more business investments into the country. I think if they see, at the moment, to me, he looks as though he's got quite an unstable taxation on businesses, and it looks as though if I was a business, I don't think I would I would put up spots in the UK. I think that I would stay away.
Yeah.
Because of that, which is not very good for our country.
I mean, just linking back to something that I saw Laura Koonsberg Sunday, the economist on the panel described Polanski's manifesto really as a fiscal fandango.
I wouldn't say quite that, but I would say that it's definitely he's saying all the right things, and you can't be quite sure how much of that is how much of that is an actual promise and how much of that is what he wants, you know?
Yeah, like linking to the thing about Liz Truss and the whole mini budget thing. Was it really what she wanted, or was she just trying to appeal to the British people? Because as soon as she saw it wasn't working, she was very quick to just change it back to the ways things were before, slashing every single tax.
Yeah.
And then that ultimately led to her obviously resigning, and that led to almost the collapse, in a way.
I mean, yeah, you can see that, as I said earlier, like he's obviously just trying to, fiscal fandango is a bit far, I'd say, but trying to say the right things. Obviously, he doesn't have to deal with the finances at the moment, and so they can say things like, we'll do this and this, just to try and get people to look his way.
Yeah. And I think, obviously, the idea of heavy taxes may appeal to a lot of, like, maybe the working class people if you're heavily taxing the richer people, but surely heavy taxes are going to slow our economic growth, and if that happens, then eventually we're not going to be able to have enough money to fund the vital things that make Britain, well, what we have, our obviously free health service, public services, schooling, that's so important.
Yeah.
So maybe Polanski's maybe not being progressive with his taxation. Maybe he's bringing us back a little bit to maybe the old,
the
old ways.
I think that I think maybe his taxation's a bit extreme, and I feel as though at the moment it's a bit unrealistic. And I feel as though if you're a business, I don't think you'd choose the UK to set up your business. And that's something that we should aim to stop doing, because I feel as though business investment is one of the main things that will get our economy back on track and our debts back on track.
And now we're going to be moving on to our third segment, and we're going to be looking at Rachel Reeves's budget strategy and the information that we have so far about her budget that she's going to be delivering tomorrow in front of the House of Commons. So Rachel Reeves is navigating a tough fiscal environment, maybe as you'd put it, and she's obviously backtracked on the idea of raising income tax. She has raised, she's going to be raising £40 billion of tax for employer national insurance.
Yeah.
So this is obviously taking the money that employees work hard to gain. Surely taxing employees heavily would lead to, or maybe a lack of people working, would you say?
Yeah, I would say also a lot of resentment towards the government, especially for those that have been working for it.
Yeah.
I feel as though she's not looking in the right direction for where they should be. Who and where they should be taxing from, a person with that statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's trying to like address this gap, isn't she really? And she's trying to maintain debt control. But surely all this taxation isn't really going to be able to fill the hole, really. And because they want to distribute all this money, they say the Conservatives have damaged and broken the economy, and they mainly they're basically blaming most of the decisions that they've made on the Conservatives, which I don't think is a very progressive way to look at it in terms of an economic sense, really. I mean, you think you should try and be a bit more positive, maybe, obviously it's not looking great. I mean, 0.3% of growth isn't amazing. But surely the way to maybe help the British public is maybe provide a little bit of support maybe for them, telling them to keep working hard, the results will come, really.
Yeah, I feel, especially with our changes last week, it's definitely not looking like as though the public have confidence in their Chancellor. Also, I think as we're not in a good place right now, the UK in terms of our economy. And I think if I was a government at the moment, I think I'd be looking on our predecessors and maybe pointing the finger a bit, which obviously not good, it's not healthy. It also shows that we are in problems, which I think most of the public already know. And I feel as though they have been put in this situation to fix the issue. They haven't been put in the situation to point fingers at those behind them. And that's not what the UK want. They don't want people to blame, they want answers. And so I don't think it shows a very good integrity or strength in their government, which is not what you want from people working hard.
Yeah, I don't know why really that she'd try and tax try and target the wealthier individuals that work hard and do make up the backbone of the economy, instead of, because if we look at the way that the money raised from taxes is distributed, quite a lot of it goes towards defence and obviously welfare. And quite a lot of people statistically remain unemployed and are living off benefits, and they're taking money from our welfare budget, which we pay for, or our parents would pay for as taxpayers. So surely maybe she needs to look at a different route, and instead of taxing more, maybe looking at taking money away from our defence budget, because obviously it's a good deterrent to have, but it's not as much of a pressing matter as like the cost of living crisis.
Well, first, I slightly disagree with you on the defence side of things,
but
definitely maybe stricter policies in terms of welfare. Or I'm not in like a a good position to tell, say how we could change the welfare, but I think at the moment it's not working as well as it could be.
Yeah.
And so I feel that's where some of our money is going that shouldn't be. And also, in response to your question about why we're taxing those that quote-unquote have broader shoulders, mainly directed towards the middle class, I think it's because those that are a step above the middle class, the ultra rich, They are able to move their money a lot more freely. They may have more aid in that because it's very apparent, their wealth is much more apparent. Rather, those that are more in the middle, like the middle class that still work hard, just have more fortune.
Yeah.
I'd say are the ones that are really taking the brunt of this at the moment.
And I just want to link that to the one of the new things that could appear in the budget. So as of when we're recording this, the idea currently for Rachel Reeves is to slash the two-child cap, which would mean that families could have as many children as they want and the government would pay for them, pay for their children in terms of their nursery, the school fees, food, clothing, all that sort of thing, in comparison to what it was before, where the government would pay for your first two children, but any more you'd have to go off your own income. What do you think, Daniel, would be the problem maybe with maybe slashing this cap on?
Obviously the UK has an issue with our birth rates at the moment, and maybe that's trying to, in the past we were trying to show that our support towards having more children to help aid that. But I think that slashing that maybe is not, I don't think it's a good idea, personally.
I also think, I agree with you there, but I think all the government are obviously using, taxpayers' money to fund people's children, really.
Yeah,
if you look at it, instead of people using their own money to pay for their children, which is normally a thing that we've seen for quite a while, but it was only because, basically, obviously, the number of children living in poverty was very high at the time, at 2017, when they decided to implement this. But now that they're slashing it, I feel like they're just going to be an incentive for families to have as many children as they want, and almost like a lottery factor, as in saying the government are going to provide everything for our children. So how many of them are going to become successful in that sort of way?
I feel it's a very difficult issue to to discuss, and I felt as though sometimes having a lot of children is a massive burden, especially when some things like the cost of living at the moment, having to not only fund your children but also having to fund yourself, like working, transport, things like that. It's very difficult for people, and so I think that we should be supporting that, but also there will be that element of like the lottery. It's like seeing seeing people trying to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's almost like taking advantage of the system, maybe you could say. So now we're just going to have a look at a summary then of what we've spoken about with Rachel Reeves today. And I'm going to pose this question to you, Daniel. Do you think Rachel Reeves is being responsible with her economic standards, or maybe she's being too cautious and maybe a bit having ambition, such as the way Mamdani and Polanski have outlined their manifestos, would allow us to have, a lot of economic growth, really?
I think that, firstly, Mamdani and Polanski offer the most compelling vision, and people need bold solutions and not incrementalism. I feel as though people see the problems, and definitely feels as though and is as though they are big problems that need big solutions. And so having these bold statements, obviously, I do not mean to state the obvious, but it's quite reassuring. And so also, if you look at the other side with the right wing, if people are being told that things like immigration is a big problem, they're going to vote for big solutions. And so that's why we're seeing politicians come up with big people-pleasing.
So linking back to something I said last week about Shabana Mahmood's immigration, if you pose something in a really bad light, it will make it seem like more of a problem than maybe it actually is.
Yes,
and that's going to make voters vote for that person.
So it's
quite a clever tactic to get people to vote for you. But once you actually have the jurisdiction to be able to implement that, do you really, obviously, it's quite unpredictable what could happen, maybe? Mm. The way the markets could react, the way people could react, really. I mean, there are protests now outside hotels about asylum seekers taking up all the room. And then obviously Shabana Mahmood has gone in straight away to implement these really the radical reforms. Mm. So I think it's quite important to have that balance between being ambitious but also realistic in a way, would you say?
Yeah, I would say that. I think that that radical things don't come up in the news very much. They don't come up on social media. And I think that government may also be maybe wary of making things seem like making like sort of small, minute statements, sort of weak solutions, and being seen as though they're too scared and to do things. I feel as though a few politicians have been accused of that at the moment, and so I feel as though they're also scared to do that. So it's quite difficult for them.
And I mean, who, just to wrap up here, who do you think? Might sound a bit of a weird question, but who do you think should pay more, wealthy individuals or ordinary taxpayers?
Oh, I say proportionally. I say that they should be proportionally on how much it means, how much the money means to them, and how much the need of both parties.
Yeah.
I feel like also we shouldn't be too divisive between the two. Obviously, there's differences, but I feel as though, to answer the question, maybe the wealthy individuals.
Thank you. So do you think that any of these economic models could work outside of Britain, maybe? If they were implemented in the United States, if Rachel Reeves's way of economic thinking was implemented in the United States, do you think people would react in the same way that they would react here in England?
I think it depends on the situation. Obviously, the UK is in a different situation than the US is in terms of things like trade and things.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to tell how well it would be received. I don't know that it would be received well, but it's hard to tell because we're in different circumstances at the moment.
Yep. So that wraps up our look at Reeves, Polanski and Mamdani. Three very different approaches to tackling inequality and affordability. And it's fascinating to see the tension between ambition and practicality and how voters respond to both. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Ballot. Make sure to subscribe and join us next week as we continue unpacking the stories shaping politics, both at home and abroad.